This is the English Heritage Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another podcast into England's past. I'm Charles Rowe. You can automatically download new episodes to your chosen device every Thursday. Just tap or click subscribe for weekly updates. Now today, as the days become shorter and darker, we'll try to understand how the winter solstice was marked at Stonehenge thousands of years ago. And we'll also find out how English Heritage will be marking the event this year and how you can take part. Joining us to link past and present are Senior Properties Historian Susan Greeny and Senior Historic Property Curator for Stonehenge, Heather Sabir. Hello to you both.
Hi.
Hello.
Can we start by explaining what solstice means and what happens during the winter solstice? And Susan, if you want to explain it to us.
The word solstice actually comes from Latin, and it means the sun or sol and stis, which is the Latin to stand still. So it's the sun's standstill. And this happens twice a year, once in the midsummer and once in the midwinter. And it's when the seasonal movement of the sun means that it is pausing at either the northern or the southern limit before reversing direction and going back again. So we call them midsummer and midwinter, and it's when the days are the longest and the shortest.
And what's the link between Stonehenge and particularly the winter solstice?
The stone settings at Stonehenge are the ones that we're familiar with, the sarsens with their horizontal lintels. They were arranged and built to carefully frame and align with the movements of the sun at both solstices, so both the summer and the winter. So there's a central horseshoe of trilithons. And when we say trilithon, I mean three stones, two upright with one on the top horizontally. And there's five of these in a horseshoe, and that horseshoe sits on an axis, so a straight line, which runs from the northeast to the southwest. And that's the axis on which the solstice alignment takes place. So if you stand in the middle of the stone circle on the shortest day, round about 21st of December, and the weather is clear, you would see the sun setting between the two tallest stones at the head of that horseshoe. Now, you don't get that effect today because, sadly, half of that trilithon and its lintel have fallen down long ago. We don't know when. But originally, there would have been quite a narrow slot, and the sun, the last kind of glimpse of the sunset would have been between those stones.
So quite a powerful image. Do we know when the first winter solstice might have been celebrated at Stonehenge?
We assume that solstices were celebrated from the time that the central stone settings were put up. So that's around about 2500 BC, so around 4,500 years ago. And when those sarsen stones were set up, they framed the solstices, as did the blue stones, which were set up between them, these smaller stones, which are the ones that were brought from Wales. So yeah, it must have been around 2500 BC that it was first sort of marked at Stonehenge.
So the trilithon arrangement is kind of central, we think, to the winter solstice celebrations.
That's right. The blue stones also have their own alignment. So in the first arrangement of blue stones, there were actually two little blue stone trilithons as well. So again, with a horizontal stone on top of two uprights. These have been since rearranged, and we don't know exactly where they stood in the original arrangement, but it seems logical that they may have also framed the sunrise and the sunset, perhaps on either side of the stone circle. So there's maybe other clues as well, but we're not so sure about those ones.
Right. You mentioned some clues there. There are other clues from the area surrounding Stonehenge that have led archaeologists to conclude that the winter solstice was an important event for ancient people. What are those clues?
About 1.5 miles away from Stonehenge towards the northeast is a really large henge monument called Durrington Walls. And before that henge itself, the earthworks were built, there was a settlement at that location, which was occupied by people around the same time that the sarsen stones were being put up at Stonehenge. And that settlement consisted of small houses surrounded by what we call middens, rubbish dumps, lots of animal bones, lots of pottery, lots of ash and charcoal. So many animal bones that archaeologists think that major feasts were happening at that location. And the archaeologists who did the excavations at that site a few years ago looked at the animal bones in detail. And one of the things that they looked at was the pig teeth. So that the animal bones are mostly pig and also cattle. And by looking at the teeth of the pigs, you can tell the age at which that pig was killed or slaughtered for eating. And the peak of the sort of cull pattern, the killing pattern, was at around about 9 months old. So if these pigs are being farrowed in the spring, that suggests that they're being killed in and around the midwinter months. So that suggests that there's mass kind of gatherings at Durrington and lots of feasting taking place in the midwinter months. And that obviously lines up with what we know about the alignment of the stones at Stonehenge.
Is there any way of knowing what the earliest gatherings would have been based on the age of those bones?
So that settlement is occupied again around 2500 BC. So it's probably being lived in by the people who are building Stonehenge, or possibly the people who are coming for celebrations and gatherings just when Stonehenge is being completed. So that settlement seems to be occupied for about 50 years or so. And it's a time when people were gathering there in large numbers. There are lots of houses and lots of animal bones, but also people coming from quite some distance away to Stonehenge at that time.
What were people celebrating during the winter solstice? You've mentioned, obviously, this idea of feasting and culling animals. What else is going on?
So at Durrington, yes, there's lots of feasting taking place, and they have really large, highly decorated, what we call grooved ware pots. So the enormous pots, which are probably being used to serve and present the food. And there's something odd going on with the pigs being killed as well, because there have been a number of instances where pig bones have been found with flint arrowheads embedded in the bones, which suggests that they are hunting these pigs before they're killed, which doesn't really make a lot of sense because these are domestic pigs. They don't need to hunt them. So there's obviously some kind of hunting ceremony or sport taking place, games perhaps, that is associated with this feasting. But I should point out really that we don't know if they were celebrating as such. It's quite difficult to get into the mindset of Neolithic people and their religious beliefs. Obviously, it's something that doesn't leave very much evidence behind. We know that winter solstice was a really important time of year, but it could have been a time of fear. It could have been a time of looking for omens. It could have been a time of, it's not necessarily that it was a happy, always, you know, happy, jolly celebration necessarily. And it's difficult for us to imagine, but we can turn to other communities across the world to help us imagine what might have been happening. So the Chumash, who are a Native American people living in what is now Southern California, for example, they had major events around the time of winter solstice, but they saw it as a time of crisis when they had to make sure that they conducted certain ceremonies and rituals to ensure that the year continued and that the coming year was full of good fortune. So they had to do certain ceremonies and events in order to ensure that, you know, the spirits would give them good fortune. So perhaps we can envisage something similar at Stonehenge.
So kind of a superstition-based belief that if you did certain things, then good things will happen.
Yeah, it's just a belief system. So it's perfectly logical for the people who are carrying out these ceremonies and events. But, and it may well have been a time of celebration, of course, a great big party. Obviously, there's lots of food and lots of people, so that does sound quite fun. But I think we shouldn't always call it a celebration as such.
Yes, because we just don't know.
Yeah. Do
archaeologists then believe that the winter solstice was as important as the summer solstice, or was it more important or less important? What's the general view these days?
It's difficult to know for sure. I think over the last few years, since the evidence has emerged from the excavations at Durrington Walls, people have suggested that midwinter was more important. However, if you look at the graphs of the kill patterns of these pigs, there is another smaller peak at midsummer, which does suggest that people were perhaps coming for midsummer events as well. And clearly at Stonehenge, the monument is aligned with the midwinter alignment kind of ahead of you as you go into the monument. But there's also the heel stone, which clearly marks the midsummer sunrise. So I think perhaps both times of year were important.
Yes. Let's bring in Heather, who's been listening to all this. Heather's senior historic property curator for Stonehenge. Heather, do we know if people marked the winter solstice at other places around the British Isles, or was it something unique to Stonehenge? I mean, for example, there was this BBC documentary that you might have seen earlier this year, which suggested that a giant ring of blue stones was erected in Wales first, and that became part of Stonehenge eventually. So are we seeing winter solstice being celebrated elsewhere?
Yes, there are many monuments around the British Isles and other parts of the world as well that reflect the solstice alignment. And yes, I mean, the research at the giant ring that you're talking about is still going on, but I think they're fairly sure that it does reflect a solstice alignment. But certainly there are lots of burial tombs, for example, which is slightly different to Stonehenge, although there are people buried at Stonehenge, but it's, you know, it's much more monumental. But I was lucky enough to go to New Grange in Southern Ireland. It's quite a long time ago now, but on the winter solstice, it's a burial tomb and it's very, very large. And you go into the chamber and there's actually what's called a light box. And as the sun is rising on the midwinter solstice, the sun actually illuminates the passage to the back of the chamber. It is quite spectacular. The year I went, we didn't quite get the full technicolor, as I would put it, but I think about a dozen of us walked down the passage right to the back of the chamber, and we stood in silence and waited. And the sun came, light came in. It wasn't full sun, but light came in and illuminated the chamber. And it was an incredibly moving experience. And the builders of that huge monument, which has wonderful decorated stonework as well, obviously knew that the sun would come through that light box at that time of the year. So it's really quite special. So yes, and I'm a great believer in human nature not having changed. You know, I sort of think of it as they were probably celebrating in midsummer because it's a lovely time of year and it's the longest day. And perhaps the midwinter was very different. But I'm sure those people would have been so tuned in to the seasons and the elements that they would have known it was the turning of the year as well. The days were going to get longer. And hopefully their crops would grow and their animals, you know, would thrive as well. So they would know that their next food was coming.
Yes, it's almost the beginning of the end of winter, isn't it? By reaching that midwinter point. Almost like looking on a clock.
Indeed.
I think the Germans say half an hour before when they give the time for half past. But we say half past, they say half before, which is interesting. So maybe that's one way of looking at it, which we could probably discuss forever. But it's a very interesting point. It's about rebirth, perhaps, in spite of the darkness. It's looking forward to the spring potentially to come and new life. But going back to this idea of winter solstice, and who actually discovered that Stonehenge is aligned for the winter solstice? Do we know about this?
Actually something I had to look up when I saw the question for this podcast, because I wasn't sure and I couldn't quite pinpoint. I found a reference that R.S. Newell, who was an archaeologist who worked alongside Colonel William Hawley, who excavated at Stonehenge in the 1920s mostly, and Newell was helping him in those excavations. It was him who first suggested, I think, that looking in the opposite direction to midsummer sunrise, which is the one that for hundreds of years people had known was an alignment and was the focus of Stonehenge, that he suggested that if you reversed that axis and looked in the other direction, that maybe midwinter sunset would be marked by some landmark, he said, you know, now lost in the landscape around Stonehenge. So I think it was him that first suggested we ought to look in the other direction. And then I think in the 1960s, when work by people like astronomer Gerald Hawkins was going on, he was looking at every single possible alignment at Stonehenge. And so I'm sure winter solstice would have been one of the ones that he was interested in. And since then, I guess in the last 15 years or so, the focus has perhaps shifted a bit more to the winter solstice because of the excavation evidence from Durrington.
Is there any way to say over what period the winter solstice was celebrated at Stonehenge before the tradition of annual solstice died out? I mean, do we know how long these people would have been celebrating for?
I mean, the short answer is we just don't know. There is evidence from the settlement that it was occupied for about 50 years or so. So not enormously long period of time. But we're not sure if that settlement was just for the people who were building Stonehenge, or whether people who were actually coming to Stonehenge for solstice celebrations were also gathering there. So that might suggest that it was a relatively short time period, but there are changes to Stonehenge later on. So the blue stones, for example, get rearranged and a series of pits are dug around the monument later on. And those changes seem to still reflect the solstice alignment. So that stays for at least a few hundred years. And shortly after Stonehenge is built, we have kind of huge changes happening in Britain, which is the arrival of new people from the continent with new types of big pottery, with the first metals, with probably new languages and new religious beliefs, and all kinds of things change. So Stonehenge is not necessarily a place that gets used for hundreds and hundreds of years in the same way. But yeah, it's not really possible to say how long solstice celebrations lasted for.
It's one of those questions that you just want to know the answer to, but I suppose it's just lost in the mists of time, isn't it? It's quite frustrating in a way.
Interestingly, I mean, we haven't had really modern solstice celebrations, people coming to see the midsummer solstice until the 1860s. So it's really from that period onwards when archaeologists are writing about the alignments at Stonehenge that people start to come along and take their bicycles on a trip and come and try and witness dawn from the middle of Stonehenge. So in some senses, the gatherings that take place at Stonehenge now have a relatively short and recent history.
Yes. And what about the winter versions, Heather? Do you know how long people have been coming to see the winter solstices?
Well, I don't know about in Victorian times, because they certainly came for the summer, but I think they did come for the winter as well. And certainly since Stonehenge has been open for the solstices, so right back into the late 1980s, people have been coming, but it's become more and more popular to celebrate the winter as well as the summer. And I'm sure that's down to, you know, the modern world, social media, et cetera, et cetera. But I think a lot of pagan and druid groups, for example, it's quite significant for them for those reasons we were talking about, that they like to mark the observances and the turning of the year.
Yes, and I suppose paying tribute to ancestors as well.
Absolutely.
You've been helping people celebrate the winter solstice over previous years, and you'll be doing it as part of English Heritage this year. How can we take part if we want to come to Wiltshire and witness the winter solstice?
Well, we're very hopeful that we will be able to welcome people into what we call managed access, where people are free to come and visit. But it's going to be the morning of the 22nd of December, because the solstice technically happens during the night. And we do talk to our local pagan and druid groups, and they wanted it to be sunrise on the 22nd of December. So it's Wednesday, the 22nd of December. And we have what's called managed access. So we allow people to come in. We have to wait till it's almost light. So we'll be letting people in about 7:45 in the morning, 7:45. Sun rises at 8:11. And then people can be in at Stonehenge until about 10 o'clock that morning, when we ask people to leave, so we can make sure we're ready then for our general visitors again at about 11:30.
Right. So it's a little bit different, really. Rather than watching the sun set between what would have been those trilithons, you're watching the sun rise at winter in the modern version.
We are. It would be very difficult to manage having people watching the sun set just because of the modern world and health and safety. And obviously we want to make sure that it's an event that everyone can enjoy. So, and again, this has been negotiated with our local druid and pagan groups, that they can come for the sunrise, the midwinter sunrise, rather than the sunset.
Susan, where does the sun rise then at this point in the year at Stonehenge?
So the sun rise at midwinter would be towards the southeast. So it's a very short sunrise and sunset period. Obviously, the daylight hours are only about 7 hours or so at midwinter, because the arc of the movement of the sun during the day is much, much shorter than in the middle of the summer.
So it's just flatter, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a really good way to look at it, actually, is if people have got the chance to go online and go on our Stonehenge Skyscape website, you can look at that and it shows you, if you switch on the skyscape view, it shows you the arc of the sun at midwinter and midsummer. And you can see the enormous difference between the path of the sun at the different times of year.
Well, that's really useful, because if people obviously can't come all the way to Wiltshire and they might be listening in another part of the world, at least they can kind of experience the wonder just by logging onto their computer. So that's really good. Heather, how many people do you expect to attend, though, for this winter sunrise version?
Well, it's very difficult to estimate, to be honest, because pre-COVID, the last time we were able to welcome people was in 2019, and I think we had about 5,000 people. But I would also like to emphasise that these arrangements are very, it's quite possible that they will change, and we'd like to encourage anyone that is thinking of coming to check our website before they set out, because obviously we have to comply with government restrictions, and hopefully, as I said at the beginning, there won't be any new restrictions, but if there are, the actual arrangements might change. The first time we reopened was for the autumn equinox, and we just had about 200 people. So we're not honestly sure how many people would feel they wanted to make the journey to Stonehenge itself. But as I say, we would urge people to please check on our website before they come.
So make sure you follow the social media, make sure you follow the website, and also get ready in case you need to come and bring wellies and warm weather gear, that sort of thing.
Well, that is another factor, of course. It is a winter event. And yes, you certainly do need to be dressed for the occasion.
Yes, because it's a real microclimate up there and it's quite exposed up on Salisbury Plain. You can get some pretty strong gusts of wind and sudden rain showers and all kinds of things. But when people are there, how do you ensure that the stones aren't damaged by visitors when they've got access, this special access to the inner circle?
Well, we do have some guidelines that we encourage people to read, because you're quite right. You know, a lot of people think, oh, they're just huge rocks, you know, what's the problem of people, you know, brushing against them or whatever. But we have so much more information these days about those big, huge rocks, not least their geology and where we think they came from. But we have a fantastic laser scan that is a record of all the working on the stones. You know, every single stone virtually has got evidence of working on it. And not only that, we've got a record of both ancient carvings on the stones themselves from the Bronze Age, the time sort of after Stonehenge itself was built, when those people that had the use of metal, the axe was quite a symbol for them, and they have actually carved the shapes of Bronze Age axes onto the stones, many of which can't be seen with the naked eye. So obviously we want to protect those as well. And then there are the lichens that grow on the stones, which give the stones a wonderful texture. So there is conservation that's needed. And then, of course, there is the grind itself. And Stonehenge has been about 50% excavated, but there is still a lot of buried archaeology under the grass. There is a sort of protective layer under the grass because of various regimes that in the past there was gravel, and then we have re-turfed a few times as well. But the site does need protecting. So we just appeal to people. We would prefer it if they didn't climb on the stones that are lying down, what we call the recumbent stones, but many people do. But it's such an important festival such an important event, I should say, for some people, that we want to welcome them and hope that they will respect the stones. So that's a little slogan we have during the solstices: please respect the stones.
Yes, because if you've been to the site before and gone into the visitor centre, I think there's a sign that says, you know, it was an ancient temple. Isn't that right, Susan? And I suppose you should be respectful of the fact that it was a religious monument, and to be respectful of a religious building, effectively.
Yes, I mean, it's a temple in terms of being a prehistoric temple, but it obviously has huge amounts of religious meaning for people today. But it's also a completely unique World Heritage Site and ancient scheduled monument. You know, this is a place we should be protecting for the future. So, you know, any damage to the archaeology or to the stones is a loss to our knowledge and to future generations. So it's, yes, respect the stones is a really important message.
Yes, definitely. Are you going to be both attending the winter solstice this year?
Well, I sort of treat it as part of my job because I'm curator of the site itself rather than the collections that belong to the site. So I do what's a pre-check probably on the Monday or Tuesday before I'll go down and make sure everything's okay. And then when people have left following the sunrise, I would do another check just to make sure there hasn't been any damage that needs attention. So yes, I'll definitely be there.
Okay. And Susan, have you done a few of these before?
Yes, I've been to several solstice events. Usually I tend to be there if media want to come and do interviews or have a spokesperson. Not always there for winter, so I'll see what happens with the regulations, restrictions and the weather, I think.
The atmosphere, though, how is that for winter solstice? I suppose it depends on the weather, doesn't it?
Well, it's usually very good-natured, actually. And I think if we do manage to open this year, I think a lot of our friends will be so delighted to be there and just enjoying being at the stones that I would imagine it will be quite a happy event for many people. And you'd be amazed how the weather almost becomes irrelevant. But of course, it always helps if we get a decent sunrise. But it's just people know that it is that certain time and just enjoy being there.
Yes. I suppose the atmosphere also has to be a non-alcoholic one, doesn't it? Isn't that one of the rules?
Yes, yes. We have stopped people bringing in alcohol for quite a few years now, and it has made a huge difference, I must be honest. Yes.
And I think if you're there first thing in the morning, you know, pre-dawn, you probably just want a bit of caffeine, if anything, and something warm.
Yes. Oh, well, it's worth mentioning, if we do go ahead, that our cafe will be open. So we hope people will be able to partake of that afterwards.
Will you be laying on buses? Will people be able to walk down to the stones?
Yes, there will be buses and there will be a certain amount of parking, but the Salisbury Red buses will be running as usual. And the details of where you can get the buses and when will be on the website as well. And the byways will actually be shut, so there won't be any parking on the byways either. That was a decision from Wiltshire Council.
Lastly then, I suppose you're just hoping for clear skies really, and hopefully good weather.
Yes, it does make a huge difference, as I was saying, you know, and I think we all deserve a nice, decent sunrise this year, don't we? It's been another difficult year, so it'd be lovely to welcome in the new year and the Christmas period with a decent sunrise.
Yes, I'd agree with that. Almost like a harbinger of good things to come in 2022. Would you agree with that, Susan?
Yes, and just to say that obviously this year we will again be live streaming the winter solstice. So like many people, I think you maybe watch it from the warmth of your own home. Mm-hmm. If you look at our social media channels online, you'll find details of the winter solstice streaming. And that means you can log in and watch the sunrise live. So that's another option for people to take part in the event.
And a very final question for both of you. What is it about the winter solstice that still captures people's imaginations today as it would have done thousands of years ago? Obviously, we're doing a winter sunrise in this modern version, and it would normally be thousands of years ago, it would have been the sunset. But regardless of what the sun is doing at that point, what is so special about this event?
I think it's got a lot to do with the turning of the year, because I think even in the modern world, even with all our technology and everything, it's a time when we all sort of hunker down and keep warm, and we put lots of other lights on, don't we? But I think it's also a time when people reflect on things, you know, the end of a year, another year coming. Without getting too philosophical, I think it's a time when people pause and look forward to better things, I think.
Yes, I think there's a bit of staying warm, being grouped with your tribe, so to speak, being around other people in the darkness and experiencing some sort of solidarity and warmth from that, and then focusing on a little shaft of light to give hope for the next year. Maybe I'm being a bit too poetic, but what do you think, Susan?
I think midwinter is a time when we know that people in the Neolithic, at least for a short period at Stonehenge, were gathering together and having great big feasts. And that's pretty much what we still do today over the Christmas period or over the various holidays that are celebrated around the world at midwinter. So yeah, it does seem to be a time when, you know, you get together with all the good things, your friends and family, but also food, and the time of harvest is over and you're using up all your food, basically. So there's various reasons, I think, why this time of year in particular means a lot. But I think people nowadays also like to have a sense of something bigger than themselves and beyond, you know, our modern everyday concerns. So to be able to focus on something like a sunrise or a sunset and just set aside a bit of time for that, it's actually quite a useful, mindful experience to kind of take notice of the natural world and how it's changing through the seasons as well.
You've been listening to the English Heritage Podcast. Join us again next week when we'll be investigating the origins of the Knights Templar. Until then, thanks for listening and see you next time.